south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Let's talk about lemmings for a second. Like, for example, when you're driving down the street or taking a cab. Lemmings, lemmings everywhere. You know what drives me nuts? When I see people wearing a mask while driving their cars. Isn't that like wearing a condom alone in your bed? Meanwhile, especially if you take a taxi, an Uber, whatever, you're sitting in a seat that's never been cleaned. A seat that's surely graced more dirty butts than a bus station toilet. I mean, look, you see lemming stupidity everywhere. Seems like every solo driver in an otherwise empty car is wearing a mask. While playing with his cell phone and touching the buttons on his radio, scratching his head, then his crotch, then fingering the steering wheel that's more contaminated than a garbage can. Then you pay him and he digs around in his pocket and gives you change. But thankfully he's covered. Einstein's wearing a mask. Is everyone a lemming? And then, I'm in a bank the other day. I walk up to the window, ask the teller to change some U.S. funny money into the local funny money. She takes the dollars, puts them in a drawer, pulls out a big stack of local funny money, licks her finger, and starts doing a count. Then she stops for a second, looks at me, and tells me to back off a bit. I have to be 6 foot from the window, when just a few seconds earlier, I handed her some money that's as dirty as toilet paper. Never mind that. Oh, and during all that, she answered the bank landline phone, cradled it between her chin and her shoulder, while she re-licked her finger and counted that stack of bills one more time. That's the rule, you know. Count and recount, three different times. I guess that means make sure those fingers are well licked, too. Then, surprise, surprise, with the other free hand, she shushed me back because I was way too close for that day's social distancing policy as she saw it. Now, of course, everyone's got their limit. I'm talking about when you blow your fuse. Man, I tell you, in the last couple months, I've had to douse water on my fuse many times. How about you? And believe me, I know how to fire back when necessary. And it can feel good, but sometimes it's just not worth it. But, you know, to expend all that effort, you know, reaming someone you don't even know, a brand new asshole. Well, let me ask you this. How many times have you been thoroughly pissed off in the age of COVID? How many times have you been completely outraged, but you held back, you let it simmer inside? Now, if you're like me and you boycott social media, you lead a much calmer life. I don't do Facebook, Twitter, or Instatrash. And that new social piece of crap, TikTok, all the kiddies and teenagers are using. I've only heard about it. I don't even know what it is. And I plan on keeping it that way. Only as these new social media platforms come out, they're supposed to be better or have more functions than the previous ones, right? So then I imagine TikTok just makes you more of a whiny, spineless, f***ing moron. Because it seems to me, and I'm sure it does to you too, that people say things on social media that they would never say to your face because it would just be rude and upsetting. Plus, there'd be a lot more broken noses in hospital emergency rooms. So in my mind, social media provides only two functions, and they're not good. Number one, to show all your friends, neighbors, and everyone that you're just a little bit smarter, hipper, and cooler than they are. Number two, social media gives you a buffer so you can blow up and say stupid things and battle with people without needing the necessary balls to say it to them in person. For example, the bank teller. If I was one of her 2,000 fake social media friends, I could have explained to her what a lemming was and why she was absolutely perfectly suited to a bank teller's job where you only need an IQ of about 80. But in light of the fact that I don't use social media, I could have, if I felt like standing up for myself, quoted my favorite biblical passage. God must really love idiots. He made so many of them. Yeah, I know. Some of you are saying, Johnny, that's not in the Bible. Well, I could be wrong. Maybe it was in the Quran, or Confucius said it, or maybe it was a fortune cookie. Anyway, I like that saying a lot. And my second favorite saying is strictly mathematical. It's the fact that, and it is a fact, that every other person you meet is below average. I know at first it sounds depressing, but remember, according to statistics, the less you know about the real world, the happier you are. So ignorant people have that going for them anyway. Take, for example, what happened to me yesterday at a local pharmacy. Now, I don't know if they do this up in the States, but pharmacies here in Latin America,
most of them have a rent-a-cop with a shotgun standing around in the parking lot. Of course, no one ever gets killed or even shot. In fact, most of those guys don't even have shells for their guns, and most of them have never even shot a gun. But still, it seems every pharmacy here in Latin America, in fact, most medium and large stores and supermarkets, have shotgun rent-a-cops too. Oh, and next time you're down here in Latin America and you're standing close to one of these guys, observe their weapon. Now, if they're sporting a shotgun, which is the most common thing you see down here, if you're a gun owner yourself and you know something about guns, chances are you'd be thinking, even if the gun he's toting had shells in it, there's a very good chance if you pull the trigger, nothing would happen. And why is that? Well, it goes back to the issue of maintenance. A word that actually exists in the Spanish dictionary, it's mantenimiento, maintenance, mantenimiento, though almost never applied in practice, except when first world franchises, gringos and expats come down and enforce it. Even so, Latin America is a reactive society. They only maintain and fix things when things break down or are falling apart. But we were talking about shotgun rent-a-cops, right? What I mean is, as a gun owner myself, having had quite a few shotguns and pistols myself, there are such things as gun cleaning kits. Every American gun owner knows that, which obviously means you have to clean your gun sometimes, and you're supposed to clean it right after you've been shooting it. And you know, I've been living here in Latin America some 30 years now, and I've met many Latino gun owners. I've been in many gun shops too, and at quite a few shooting ranges. I've had all kinds of Latinos show me their guns and their gun collections. But never once have I ever seen, sitting on a shelf or propped up with those guns, a real honest-to-goodness gun cleaning kit. And I'll tell you, 90% or more of the rent-a-cops sporting shotguns don't have one either. Again, I suggest if you're ever next to one of those guys, have a look at the gun. And let me pretend to be a clairvoyant here. I don't even have to be there, and I can tell you right now what that gun looks like. It's all gouged, dinged, and scratched up. The finish, the bluing, completely worn off the thing. If it's got a plastic stock, it's all chipped and gouged. If it's wooden, it's chipped and cracked with chunks missing. If you get really close to the thing, look where the screws are. You'll see them on the sight and on the stock. Every gun's got a few small but noticeable screws. Now, with the guns the rent-a-cops have, it's just a fact that 90% of those guns have rusted and missing screws. Not a good sign. Now, it's not to say the guns that rent-a-cops have don't work. It's just that there's a pretty good chance if they actually have to use the thing, it won't. But I digress. Where were we? Oh, yeah, back at the pharmacy. So yesterday I was standing outside a cut-rate pharmacy because pharmacies these days with COVID will only let a couple of people in at a time, you know, to maintain that false sense of security that crazy-ass social distancing is supposed to provide. So anyway, I'm in the line outside of the building, stepping on the marker. There's a marker painted on the cement walkway every meter. And why the markers aren't every 2 meters, like they are in so many other places, like grocery stores, Walmarts, etc., well, that's part of the lunacy of it. Anyway, suddenly, a brand new $100,000 jet black window-tinted Range Rover pulls up with diplomatic plates on it. Aha! Turns out all of us line standers were getting graced with the presence of one of those guys you just love to hate. A pustulant, carbuncular politician. So he pulls up in a no-parking zone right in front of the pharmacy, and then this big fat whale of a guy gets out and takes cuts right up to the front of the line. I couldn't hear what he said to the rent-a-cop at the door, who was holding one of those pistol-shaped temperature sensors, you know? But to the guard's credit, he told the guy to get in line. He didn't give a rip who he was or what corrupt government agency he worked for. Though I could see the fat guy was burning up, giving him the apparently you-don't-know-who-I-am kind of treatment. But again, it didn't work, and I thought that quite admirable on the part of the rent-a-cop. So the guy grumbled a bit under his breath and sauntered over behind me in the line. Of course, even outside, everyone's wearing a mask. As for me, I have a mask, but I carry it in my hand when I'm outside. Though I understand in this particular Latin country, it's a $100 fine if you don't wear a mask in public. Though I don't know of anyone who's ever been tagged yet, and I walk around a lot without one. But I always have one in my hand or my pocket, just in case. Anyway, this fat political turd behind me takes off his mask and lights up a cigarette. I mean, this guy's really obese. He's wheezing and panting, puffing away. And finally, after 10 or 15 minutes, the line moves on up. We get past the rent-a-cop. He shoots that little temperature sensor gun at us. And both of us are finally in the pharmacy. I'm talking about me and that huffing, puffing, sweaty-ass politico. The shotgun rent-a-cop let us both in at the same time. And it figures, as for COVID virus mania, the pharmacy had installed a plexiglass barrier all around the checkout stations.
So I walked up to the teller, put in my order, and as is usual in Latin America, you don't pay the person that attends you, unless it's a very small shop and there's only one or two people working there. You see, Latin American accounting systems are triple redundant, which makes them terribly inefficient. It's something we gringos and expats see all the time, but they just don't know it, nor do they get it. That means practically every hardware store, tienda, appliance outlet, you name it, you order whatever at the counter, and you have to go to a separate window and pay the cashier. Then the lady, it's usually a lady, gives you a couple of receipts. You bring them both back to the original guy you bought it from. You give him one of those receipts, and then he gives you the product. It's totally stupid, inefficient, and redundant, but this is Latin America. So anyway, I went to the cashier window to ante up. And that fat, sweaty, wheezing turd, that political scumbag, was at that same window in front of me. Then, wouldn't you know it, he turns around and says to me in halfway decent English, "Gringo, you're too close to me. Keep your distance." Now, remember what I said before about dousing water on a burning fuse? Well, in this case, I guess I didn't put enough water on it, because I couldn't help but say something. I said, "Oh, thank you for being so considerate. I appreciate you don't want to give me what you have." Then he gave me the evil eye and waddled on out. Like I said, I couldn't resist. Oh, and I said it in Spanish, which was much better than his English. Yeah, you know, some days, depending on the circumstances, you find your skin's a little bit thinner than it was the day before, depending on how many dickheads you happen to run into. And now for something completely different. You know, you accumulate a lot of really good and some really useless information the more you read, right? Now, when I was a kid, and there was no internet and all that, I used to hear my mom say, "You guys watch way too much TV, you ought to read a book." And she'd say, "For every hour of TV, you got to read a book for an hour," and she enforced that law. And of course, today you hear parents say all the time to their kids, "You're on that smartphone way too much." But they never say, "You ought to read a book." That explains our society, doesn't it? You know, the longer you live here in Latin America, the more you realize, and you see it up front and personal, that since they've got no OSHA, workers here take the craziest chances on the job, and no one says a thing. Stuff you could never, in a million years, get away with while on the job in the States. Now, when I say there's no OSHA, of course, every Latin country has environmental safety laws. They always copy the U.S., but they never set aside the funding for the manpower or equipment to really enforce any of that stuff. In other words, the rules are there, but no one's out there forcing you to wear the hard hats, the helmets, the steel-toed shoes, safety harnesses, the eye protection, the masks, you know, the common safety gear you see construction workers use up in the States. I know a lot of you will disagree with me when I say I think it's a good thing that they don't enforce that stuff. I just think that you're responsible for your own life, and the government really has no business telling you what to do. They can make guidelines, no problem, but you should be the one to decide if you're going to wear leather gloves and chaps if you're going to chop down a tree. By the way, when you're at home insulating the attic or drilling a hole to mount a picture, do you wear the required gloves, mask, and safety goggles as required on a real construction job? I doubt it. Problem is, of course, since every other person you meet on the street is below average, that means if the government has laws but are not going to enforce that stuff, your employer, the business, or the man you work for would be the guy to hand out the safety equipment and enforce those rules because he doesn't want to get sued. And he definitely doesn't want worker downtime. Hey, you know, in a perfect world, it would be nice if the government made logical rules and enforced them equally. But governments are illogical and corrupt. Anyway, after being down here in Latin America all these years and knowing a bit about the construction business, meaning the right and the wrong way to do things, it just surprises the hell out of me why more people aren't dead or injured on the job. Then again, Latinos are fatalistic, as they always say. It's in los manos de Dios. It's in the hands of God. So here's the dilemma. At my place in Guatemala, I have a giant cistern. It's a reservoir to collect rainwater and such, and every year or so I would drain it and have my maintenance guy go inside the thing and scrape it down, wash it with Clorox, and give it another coat of a special epoxy-based water barrier. And man, does that stuff stink, and is it toxic. So I bought a nice industrial mask with charcoal filters on it, and I even hooked up my air compressor and a fan to recirculate the air going in and out of that thing so my maintenance guy wouldn't keel over. So anyway, I told him what to do about the mask and the air compressor, and I took off for a couple hours. When I came back, it was all done. And I also noticed he didn't even take the mask out of its package. I said, "You didn't use the mask?" He said, "I don't need a mask, no big deal." And that's the general attitude amongst workers here in Latin America. You see guys shimmying up trees and poles with no safety ropes, guys hot wiring electric meter boxes with no gloves, people disconnecting the seatbelt buzzers because they just don't want to use their seatbelt. But still, you rarely hear of people getting fatally injured on the job. So then I got to thinking about dangerous jobs and careers. And I looked up and found the usual suspects. You know, the most dangerous job in the world is logging. Turns out every year, 97 out of 100,000 people die. Second most dangerous, fishermen. 77 out of 100,000 die. Number three, air pilots and flight engineers. 59 out of 100,000 die. That's yearly. Number four, roofers. 51 out of 100,000 die each year. Number five, garbage men. Or is it garbage ladies or garbage people? Which begs the question, how many garbage women come around your neighborhood? For that matter, lady roofers. Where are those feminists when you need them? So anyway, I checked the top 10 most dangerous jobs. But here's something no one, and I mean no one, ever talks about. And believe me, you heard it here first. Do you know what the most dangerous job in the world really is? I'm talking about a real job, not a stunt like rocketing yourself over the Grand Canyon with a motorcycle. Get this. It's being President of the United States. Did you know that 4 out of 45 presidents have been killed in the line of duty? That's Lincoln, McKinley, Kennedy, and Garfield. That means if you're president, you have a 1 out of 11 chance of getting murdered in office. And get this, 11 out of the 45 presidents have been shot at and wounded. Meaning, if you're president, you've got a 1 in 4 chance of taking a bullet. Believe me, anyone who wants to be president and doesn't know those facts is a complete moron or is such a complete sociopath and is so in love with power that he'll risk worse odds than playing a game of Russian roulette. Because, you know, with Russian roulette, there's only 5 or 6 chambers in the revolver. That's a 1 in 5 or 6 chance of getting the job done. Meanwhile, as president, you've got a 1 in 4 shot of taking a bullet. In fact, even being an astronaut is twice as safe as being a president. As an astronaut, you got a 1 in 25 chance of dying. So the question again is, who but a delusional sociopath would ever want to be president? Oh, and here's a fun fact. Did you know that Abraham Lincoln's first vice president, his name was Hannibal Hamlin? Imagine if Lincoln would have got shot in his first term, then we'd have had a Hannibal for a president. Though I don't think the name would have caught on with moms and their kids. Oh, and to add another crazy fact, you know, when Lincoln got shot in his second term and Vice President Andrew Johnson became president, fun fact about that guy. He lived the frontier life till he was 18, then married a 16-year-old shoemaker's daughter who taught him at age 18 how to read and write. So we once had a president who was illiterate till he was 18, though I'm sure he did wear nice shoes. Sorry about the digression there. Oh, and do let me know if I digress too much. I wouldn't want you guys and gals out there to think I'm straying way too much from the Latin American topic. Do let me know. All right, now here's a topic near and dear to my heart. Gringos getting ripped off by gringos. Hey, it happened to me. The first thing you have to know when you delve into that subject, I'd say by my own estimates, 80% of the gringos who get ripped off, maybe even 90%, get gouged and scammed mainly because they don't know any Spanish. And that means, of course, that many, many gringos and expats who've been ripped off or gouged don't even know it. And some of them never will. Like, for example, when buying a car, renting a house, buying food, and just doing business with street vendors. Fact is, if you don't speak at least a little bit of Spanish, you're most likely going to get hit with gringo prices. And astute gringos and Latinos know, as long as you get hit up with a price that's noticeably lower than what you're used to up in the States, well, gringos, especially new, fresh, green gringos, are completely satisfied with the deal. And then only after they've been down a while and see what the real local pricing is, might they get upset or pissed off. So then I guess a better title for this topic is not the truth about gringos ripping off gringos, but how to wise up and not be a target for gringo prices or worse. First off, there's a sliding scale of being ripped off, and it's in the eye of the beholder. For example, suppose someone sold you a 1 ounce silver coin for $5, and you looked it up a couple days later and it was only worth $2.50. You got ripped off, right? But suppose you paid twice the price for that silver in 1995, and now, in 2020, it's worth $20. Can you really look back and say you got ripped off? Well, considering you quadrupled your money by today's prices, no. Even with inflation, you made out great. But strictly speaking, back in 95, you got ripped off. So who's complaining? I found the easiest way to get nailed for gringo prices is to listen to gringos and expat bars or to put faith in those English journals and rags that you'll find on the tourist trail in any Latin country. By the way, that's one way to know you're completely off the gringo tourist trail. If you walk into a bar, coffee shop, or restaurant and you don't see a local English language rag or two in a rack or stand or stacked on the counter. So the more English language rags you find, the more you're on the tourist trail. Thing is, when fresh green gringos and expats first come down to Latin America, English rags and journals are the first thing they grab and start reading. And if that's where you get most of your information, you're going to get the idea of the prices you see for the services and things they sell are the real and true going rates for the area. Though in many cases, you'd be wrong. For example, I'm looking at one of the English language rags that comes out of Cuenca, Ecuador. I'm in the classified ad section right now. I see a post on July 6th, 2020, a couple days ago. In English, of course. Everything's in English here. And the headline says, VMI Insurance Company reduces deductibles to half at no cost to you. Wow, you're thinking, ain't that great? You're thinking everyone needs health insurance, and if you haven't got it already, that'd be a great company to go to, right? VMI Insurance. Let me read the rest of it. It says, VMI announced that for all current clients and any new client who signs up for health insurance in 2020 will have their deductible halved for the first year term. For example, if you sign up for the $2,000 deductible plan, you will automatically get the $1,000 deductible plan. This also applies to current clients. If you need more details, then they give a phone number. And then at the bottom of the posting, there's a nice picture of four people, two of them looking 100% gringo and two Latinas. All right, so then what's wrong with this picture, this insurance company ad? Well, I'll tell you, for anyone who's done some investigation into the various insurance plans here in Latin America for gringos and expats, soon enough you'll discover that is if you speak Spanish and look at the Spanish language policies, you'll find almost all good private health care plans have the tiniest of deductibles. So just the mention of a $2,000 or $1,000 deductible, man, that's a red flag for me right away. In fact, the private insurance plan that I have, that I pay something like $80 a month for, has a zero deductible. Most private plans in Latin America don't even have them. What they have is a clause that says they're going to pay 80% or 90% or 100%, depending on the plan you buy, with a yearly or lifetime maximum. So what I'm saying is if you're a non-Spanish speaking gringo or expat and you read this article, you think, hell, in the United States, I got a $5,000 deductible. This is great. It's only $2,000 or $1,000. So obviously in your mind, you're not thinking you're getting gouged or ripped off. It's much cheaper and much better than what you've got up in the States. But in reality, you see, plans like these have gringo middlemen in charge. They know when fresh green gringos and expats end up in a very gringoized area. One of the first things they're going to do is go to an insurance broker that speaks English. Now, of course, if you want to know the ins and outs and the do's and don'ts of getting private health care insurance here in Latin America, I suggest you go to expatplanb.com and get my 100-plus page Latin American health care report. Bottom line, if you can, avoid English-speaking insurance brokers. Though admittedly, if you get on one of their plans for the first year or so, at least you have coverage, though you paid way too much for it. Though it really amazes me to see that gringos and expats who've been living in a gringoized area for a while, they continue to pay way too much for certain things, especially rent, health, and car insurance. I'd say there's an epidemic of gringos that pay twice as much for their car insurance as they have to, simply because they're buying it from an English-speaking broker. In fact, I've personally looked over a couple of car insurance policies for gringo expat friends of mine, guys who spoke no Spanish, and I pointed out to them that I could get them the exact same coverage for half the price. The only thing is, I told them they'd have to go down to the main insurance office, and no one there speaks English. So guess who got roped into helping them with it? Yep, no good deed goes unpunished, huh? Oh, and speaking of English magazines, rags, and publications on the gringo tourist trail, beware of woo-woo peddlers and bullshit artists. For example, on that same English language Ecuadorian rag, we've got this wonderful woo-woo promotion in English, targeted at clueless New Age gringos, posted July 7th, 2020. Let me paraphrase this advertisement here. It says, in the age of COVID, you need an approach to strengthen and improve your immune system. You can let Ivana do it. She offers a treatment for an improved and maintained immune system. And here's the scientific part, yuck, yuck. Electing to have an osteopathic treatment utilizes the ability of our body to rediscover its physical, mental, and biochemical balance. Then she says, to state the fourth osteopathic principle, quote, the rule of the artery is absolute. Andrew Steele, the creator of osteopathy, says that if blood circulation is adequate, disease cannot develop. The blood carries all the nutrients necessary for the disease not to settle, and our immune system is strengthened. She says our treatment system activates the circulation of body fluids, thus regulating and balancing your body's biochemistry. Then she gives her credentials. We'll omit her name here. She says, I graduated from the University of Cuenca with a bachelor's degree in physical therapy. Impressive. And then I specialized and got my osteopathic certification in Madrid, Spain. Now, here's the thing. She posts her contact information, and she's not a doctor. If she was, she'd be shouting it off the rooftops because the title doctor is huge in Latin America. Yet, it's never mentioned, which probably means she went to a seminar in Madrid, Spain, and got herself a little diploma. I see that there's a lot of those week and two-week diplomas going around. Anyway, now she lays claim to some special immunological treatments, as spelled out by this guy, Andrew Still, who, by the way, died in 1917. Not 70, 17. Stating this ridiculous idea, to me anyway, of the rule of the artery. Stating that if the blood circulation is adequate, disease cannot develop. Have you ever heard of any medical explanation that's so simplistic and stupid? Again, if blood circulation is adequate, disease cannot develop. And this, amigos, is the kind of crap that sucks in fresh green gringos, usually in the first few weeks or months they arrive. They pick up all those English language rags. They're free, you know. Though I have to admit I read them once in a while myself. Because they do have some amusing articles, and I get a kick out of the ads. It's not to say those English rags are bad. They're good for something. They highlight places to go, things to do, restaurant reviews and such. But it's buyer beware, and that's as it should be. But the deals are far and few in between. And the target, of course, gringos who don't speak Spanish. And they know gringos, especially newly arrived gringos, wear rose-colored glasses for quite a long time. And that they're rather trusting and gullible. So advertisers, as a rule, know you need products, services, and stuff to get yourself set up and settled in. So in a way, they know if you don't speak Spanish, they got you over a barrel. All right, we're getting towards the end of the show now, and I'd like to mention once again that I've canceled my August Expat Insider Seminar. It's been rescheduled for January 2021. I'm certain that one's going to be a full house, so sign up as soon as you can and get in on the early bird discounts. Just go to expatplanb.com for full info. Oh, and if you want further details on that 60-day passport program I told you about, that's a passport you get by investing in a particular country. Remember, this passport plan came out as a response to the COVID thing, which just destroyed tourism in Latin America and the Caribbean. And the real amazing thing about this plan is you can do it all online, not having to go back and forth to the country. You only go once to pick up the passport. For complete details, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.